You're listening to Play It Again, Swig. I'm Jocelyn Swigger, and I'm trying to learn all the Chopin etudes. I'm also trying to balance hanging out with my toddler, teaching full-time, and life's other distractions. This is my audio diary of that process. Well, it's Saturday, March 17th, and let me start talking about some music that's actually not Chopin, but it'll kind of come back and relate to Chopin in a minute. I've been practicing the piano part to Appalachian Spring, which I'm going to play in a couple of weeks. And it's been a really nice reminder of a couple of things. One, specifically how pianistic, obviously, these Chopin etudes are. But I think it gets kind of easy to take that for granted, that everything that I'm playing, even when it's really, really hard and driving me crazy, is about how the hand best fits the piano and best works at the piano. So when I'm playing something like just a little 2 seconds of Appalachian Spring, like this kind of thing, so that's a really nice tune, and it's really great to hear it, but it doesn't fit the hand at all. Like, it just is not, you can tell that when he wrote it, no part of his mind was, how does this feel under my fingers? That's just not any part of his process. Instead, it's, I want to hear these notes, and, oh, we can put them in the piano, because the piano has those notes. So it's interesting how different it is working on something that's like that. And something else that's quite different about that, I mean, of course, there's a lot that's quite different about it, right? Like, it's one part out of, I want to say 13, but I can't remember exactly. But it's one part out of many others. I won't be playing it from memory, although I have to memorize a lot of the little licks just because there's so much jumping around. There will be a conductor, so I'm working with other people. I mean, there's a lot that's really different about that piece from the Chopin etudes. You know, it's Copland, it's 20th century, blah, blah, blah. But something that I think maybe I can take something from, although I haven't figured out exactly yet what it is, but I was kind of thinking about how I practice pieces that I'm getting ready to rehearse versus how I practice pieces that I'm practicing by myself. And it's even, I think, more this way when I'm practicing something that's going to be for an ensemble that's led by a conductor. But even when I'm practicing for something that's going to be for a chamber music rehearsal or a duo or accompanying or just even, you know, collaborative playing, I feel like there's a more almost business-like in the good way or workman-like or journeyman-like or maybe sort of craft rather than art way that I think about the practicing for it, which is basically that when I'm getting ready for my rehearsals, I'm learning all the notes and all the rhythms and all the dynamics and all the tempos and making sure they're comfortable in my body. And beyond that, I kind of don't really worry about it. And then I sort of trust that in the rehearsal, either led by the conductor or working very, very actively, and sometimes working very actively with the conductor. Sometimes I'm the person that talks too much in rehearsal, or not talks like gossiping, but is too sort of actively vocally involved in rehearsals. Anyway, but with a collaborative, you know, like a smaller collaborative thing, that's certainly true. I guess the point that I'm making is that when I'm practicing for something that I'm going to be rehearsing with somebody else, at some level, I think I worry about doing the craft part on my own and figure that the art will take care of itself in the rehearsal. And then in rehearsal, I work really hard on the art part. But there might be something actually kind of good about that. Because I was thinking about, and it's also that most of the things that I play collaboratively are things that I am capable of doing, but just haven't learned those particular notes yet. I mean, obviously there's like really hard duo and trio and song literature out there. But for the most part, the music that I play that's like that is, okay, well, I know that I can do this. I know that I already have the tools in my toolbox to do this. I just haven't figured out exactly what these particular patterns and these particular notes are. And with these etudes, this is about expanding my toolbox, right? I don't have all the tools I need yet to play. Yet, I'm saying hopefully I'm planning to getting them, but I don't have all the tools that I need yet to play these etudes. So there's something about practicing them that makes the art piece feel, impossible is too strong a word, but it makes it feel like a struggle. And there's something kind of refreshing about practicing this other piece that I am fully confident I can play, although a lot of it is very awkward. The little lick I was playing has some stuff around it that is, it's fine, but it's just a little bit of a pain to practice. Anyway, I'm rambling a little bit, but the point that I'm trying to get at, which you can tell I have not fully fleshed out yet, but this is sort of what I think I'm grasping my way towards slowly, is that there's something about practicing and just sort of knowing you can learn the notes and the, and when I say learn the notes, I mean learn the notes and the rhythms and put them in your body and all the dynamics and all that. But there's something about just knowing, okay, well, I'm just going to do this. That's really different from, okay, here's this thing that I'm doing in this open-ended way. And someday maybe I will reach this perfect, wonderful way of playing it in such an artistically moving way. And the second way is sort of exhausting and feels like it's impossible. And the first way is like, yeah, okay, I'll just do this. So I wonder if there's something I can, you can see where this is going. I wonder if there's something I can take out of the practicing to rehearse, and what would happen if I practiced my solo stuff, meaning these etudes, sort of practicing it just to as if I'm getting it ready for a rehearsal and then have a rehearsal with myself. I don't know. It's a thought, and you can tell it's not a fully formed one yet. I'm not being terribly articulate today. But that might be something interesting. So I'm going to kind of play around with that this week and see if that goes anywhere interesting. Speaking of practicing versus rehearsal, I'm going to have my first rehearsal this week for Rhapsody in Blue with a wind ensemble. And so I may have very different thoughts about practicing versus rehearsal next week. I'm really excited about that. I think that'll be good. Also, before I forget, next week there will not be a podcast because I'm going to be at the MTNA conference in New York City. And I'll be tweeting about that. So if you follow me on Twitter, you can find out what I thought about that at that point. And I probably will report back about it as well in 2 weeks. But that's kind of the stuff I'm thinking about. Oh, also, just one more thing before I get into the Chopin playing. It was again, and I'm so annoyed about this, it was again not a great practice week because I got sick and my husband got sick. The week before, our kid was sick, and this week we were sick. So that was not fantastic. But I'm better now. We're all healthy now. Onward. Okay, so I'm kind of obsessed with Opus 10 number 2, which I know is not new. I know I've been obsessed with this thing forever. I have this idea. I think I read this somewhere. I'm sure I read this somewhere. That if you can play Opus 10 number 2, then that solves a lot of the problems of the other ones. And, you know, I kind of stopped reading about these etudes because every time I would look up the one I was looking at, online, you know, Google and Wikipedia and whatever, I would find some quote by somebody who said, well, this is one of the most difficult etudes. And I just felt like, all right, that's demoralizing. I'm going to stop. But I actually do feel like this Opus 10 number 2, if I can get this one working, I think it's going to make a lot of the other ones fall into place. This is partly what I've been talking about for the last couple of weeks, where I've been really thinking about how I move my thumb, in this case, the right thumb. So you play the first chord and then close the thumb into the rest of the hand. Before playing the other notes, I'm doing this really slow motion, and then open the thumb out to play the next chord, and then close to play the next ones. Instead of thumb out, leave them out. Here, I'll even leave the note down. So that it turns into a stretch, and then play, leave them out, so it becomes a stretch. Instead, I'm moving them in. Moving them in. Moving them in. Moving them in. Which is helpful and working, but what it's actually allowing me to do, and this is what I've been kind of trying to get at with this piece for months now when I've been working on it, because I put it on the shelf for a while. So I've also been thinking a lot about rotation, which is, of course, when you turn a key in a lock or turn a doorknob, that motion, but a key in a lock is probably better for this motion. So I think I need more rotation moments than I thought, and I'm sure that they need to be smaller. But I think there are some that I'm just not putting in. So for example, this first one for me is actually probably the hardest one in the piece, or one of the hardest ones in the piece. But so you play this first chord, and so then here my pinky is, right? And I need to get my third finger, that's the root finger, if you give somebody the finger, up to this next note here. So if I close my thumb in, that brings the hand over, and that makes it easier. But I can also turn my hand just a little tiny bit, this is the doorknob motion, into the middle to get here. And then I'm going to turn a little bit to the right, and then a little bit to the middle, and then this is where I'm starting to have more rotations than I think I need. To the right, to the middle, to the right. This one can keep going to the right, but then here it's to the middle, to the right, to the middle. Oops, that's totally not the note. There we go. I'm not looking at the music, so I'm trying to do this really slowly and talk through it. So here I am, and then I go to the middle, to the right, to the right, to the middle, to the right, to the middle, to the right. Anyway, basically, whenever I do, let's call it a finger crossing. So here I've got my fourth finger, you know what, I'm just going to say four finger numbers. And if that means nothing to you, then don't worry about it. But so if I, so, but basically, ah, no, I can make it make sense to you. So, basically when a lower number goes to a higher note, you hear that that's a higher note. That's what I'm going to call a finger crossing. Okay. So basically when I do these finger crossings, I need to actually turn my hand towards the middle. So it's like, if you've got your hand sort of on the keyboard, the thumb goes down, not because I'm playing the thumb down, but just because, the whole hand goes in that direction. Okay. So when I say go to the middle, I mean thumb goes down for turning. All right. So what I'm saying is with all these crossings, thumb goes down, thumb goes down, thumb goes down, thumb goes down, thumb goes down. And just to be clear, I'm not saying that the thumb has to go down, right? I'm just talking about that direction. Anyway, I hope that makes some kind of sense. I'm having to go through the whole piece and really figure out all of those moments, which I haven't quite done exactly, because before, when I didn't have the thumb closing in, it felt stiff and the turning felt awkward, and it just felt like I wasn't sure I was doing the right, and I just didn't want to practice in the right thing. It just felt awkward. I didn't want to practice it in. But I think that I actually know how this is supposed to work now. Actually worked out this part, and you can probably hear that it's starting to fall apart. Ugh. I haven't worked it out. I'm going to stop right there, actually, and tell you about a moment right here. This moment, I really, really, really want to do, and I'm not even actually sure that I want to do, actually, but I have clearly trained myself to do a slide where my third finger just slides from this E flat to the D, which seems to work really nicely, but it just also seems so silly that I'm not sure it may not be the best solution, but I've tried to practice in a couple of other things, and I just, in the heat of the moment, keep coming back to that. So that's a point I have to look at a little bit more and think about a little bit more. Anyway, you can hear that works, right? So if I mean, just having just talked you through that slow thing that I just did, when I played through this first part, it felt great. And then I have to remember what happens. Ugh. Anyway, it's you can hear it's not polished, and it's not there, and I haven't really practiced it in this way as much as I need to. But I think that's going to work. I think it's going to work. So when I do my next podcast for you, which is in 2 weeks, I'm going to play this piece for you, however it goes. Hopefully it'll work. It should. But that's tempo, what I was just playing. That's, let's see, tempo is 144, which is this. Yeah, so that's tempo. Another thing that I need to do, this goes back to what I was talking about, the sort of practice versus rehearsal. So this is very clearly, if I'm going to make that dichotomy, which is of course a fake dichotomy, but let me just go with it for now. This is clearly practicing, not rehearsing, right? This is nothing to do with, oh, it's this beautiful sweep that goes up to the top. You know, it's nothing about that. It's just, how do I make my mechanics work here? I think I need to do some, let's call it rehearsing, obviously, so that it doesn't just sound like I'm a robot. Although at this point, if I could get to sounding like a robot that could really play the piece, that would actually be a nice place to get to. Anyway, but so I think I need to do some quote unquote rehearsing, because I actually need some phrasing breaks in between phrases, which is the musical thing to do, right? That there's like little moments where I pause in there, and I just did that off the cuff, so those might not be exactly where I want them, but those are going to make it sound more musical. although I may listen to the tape when I edit this and go, oh, that sounds horrible, I'm not going to do it. But I do think I need some breaths between my phrases. And the point is that that's going to also help my arm feel better. It doesn't hurt now what I was just doing, but it's, I think that's going to be important. So the practice versus rehearsal dichotomy, which I just said is a fake one, then of course explodes itself because I have to practice in that moment. But it might be useful to think about, let me practice in my mechanics, get myself ready for my quote unquote rehearsal. And then in my rehearsal go, oh wait, we need a breath here. See the we, I'm totally going crazy. I know I'm not rehearsing this with another pretend imaginary friend person. But anyway, you know, when you do a collaborative rehearsal, you say, oh, we need a breath here. We need to take a little time. Let's try that. So I think that might be useful to practice, especially doing, I don't know if I've said this yet today, but I've probably said this every week for the last 2 years, my God, but, not that I've been doing this for 2 years, but, I need to do just the 16th notes without the chords. And that'll be a really good way of practicing my little turning moments. So I need to practice that, and then I think I need to rehearse in some of the shaping and the breaths, and that will hopefully bring this thing together. So I'm going to play this for you in 2 weeks, promise. Okay, next one that I'm looking at, which I still cannot quite get serious about, I don't know what my problem is Opus 10 number 4. I'm just going to sort of show you how practicing this works. I haven't played this through for you really, because I keep kind of playing you the first couple of lines and then going, well, it kind of goes like that, which is sort of how my practice goes. But let me tell you about a couple of things in here. One is that I actually had a musical discovery, which was really nice to have in this piece, because I hadn't had any sort of, you know, entry point moments quite about it yet, which is that there's a really cool transition with a German sixth. So all you theory geeks out there, yay, German sixth chord. Which goes like this. So here's a five chord. Here's a one chord, right? Normal, right? And then, by the way, if these numbers mean nothing to you, then just think about something else for a minute. Anyway, so here we are. Here's a one chord. This is just the same chord, but with a chromatic. It's like using the chord as a pedal, but we have just this chromatic moment. And then we have a chromatic moment that gets us to a German sixth, which then goes to here. Okay, so it's like the classic German sixth moment, which I love it. And so let me play you that in context. Here we are. Isn't that cool? Okay, so let me play you this from the beginning. This is under tempo, and of course what the tempo actually is a little bit up for debate, but I'm not worrying about that too much right now. I'm just going to be up under tempo. One other thing, oh, I need to tell you one other thing before I play it, is that my whole thing that I've been thinking about closing the thumb in, especially in the right hand, works here too, because we have long notes with chords. Here are those, a long note up at the top, and then a chord. So this is all one hand. And it's much, much easier if I play the chord and close my hand, play the chord and close my hand. It's almost like I'm picking something up or pinching or something. Anyway, here's what this thing sounds like for now. Maybe this will shame me into getting serious about practicing it instead of going, well, it kind of sounds like that. I think I'm going to work on something else, which is what I do every day. Okay. Six, and now let me turn the page, because I don't really have this thing memorized yet. Okay, so now here is a moment that I actually figured out the structure of. It's flat, natural, flat, natural. Then you do it backwards, and then you go on to the next thing, which takes us to the return to the beginning. Basically, what happens is I play through that much, and then I go, I don't feel like working that anymore. And if I have my timer set to work on it for 10 minutes, which is what I usually do, I will usually go somewhere towards the beginning and try to memorize when it's staccato and when it's connected and when it's separated and when it's soft and when it's loud and all that sort of thing. What I really need to work on, of course, for this, like the big, I think, technical game in this piece is, of course, the jumping, right? So there's all the jumping in the left hand. And there's a lot of different ways you can do it. The way that I'm trying to do it, this, of course, is consistent with my big obsession about rotation that I'm in the throes of. I'm trying to do this like it's rotating. Is this a good way to describe this? Yeah. It's almost like I'm throwing the hand. And like my elbow is mostly still, but turning a lot. By the way, I'm not sure that I've figured out exactly how to do this, so this may not be exactly the best way to do it. But to show you a smaller way, if you do just like this, just like a C major one. So if you put your pinky down like a karate chop and then let your hand fall into the rest of the chord, that would be that's a rotation, right? We're back to the whole doorknob motion. So if you make it bigger, so then I can't quite reach it, right? Because my hands are a little small, but I can still do the, let's call it karate chop, which is sort of a ridiculous exaggeration and a horrible image for my poor piano, but it knows I don't mean it. I don't think my piano is actually sentient, by the way. Anyway, so if you do karate chop down and then let the hand fall to the chord, it's kind of the same feeling, or it's like if you had your hand on a really big doorknob, or in fact, if you had your hand on a Pilates ball and you just kind of let your hand roll on the ball a little bit, that would be exactly the motion that I'm talking about. So that's how I'm trying to do this. And when I do it right, it feels great. But the problem for me right now is that I haven't practiced it enough to actually do it in a comfortable way and hit the right notes. I can totally do it like really super comfortable and just not hit any of the right notes in the left hand, which is going to go like this. Or the right hand, apparently. So actually, this sounds kind of like the kind of exercise I would give a student trying to teach this motion, is to, you know, just do the motion and don't worry about the notes at all. But as my students know, when I make them do this kind of thing, when I'm teaching them a new motion, it's really hard not to worry about the notes at all. So I think I need to, okay, so here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to keep practicing this. I'm going to do probably only 10 minutes a day on it, I have to admit. but I'm not going to practice the right hand of this for a while. I'm just going to do these left hand cartwheel motions. Cartwheel, like a big cartwheel, not like gymnastics, like a wheel of a cart, a big wheel, or Pilates ball or whatever you want to call it. Big rotation. I'm going to practice the left hand, big rotation, and I'm not going to practice the right hand these moments, which is pretty easy to just kind of do that for 5 minutes and then never get to the left hand. So that's what I promise you. So I've just made you two promises for the next podcast, one of which is I'm going to play through 10 number two, come hell or high water. And the other one is I'm going to practice the left hand of this thing. I think those are good pledges. I will hold to them. I'm not going to tell you very much about 10 number seven because I just haven't been practicing it very much, but I have a student working on it. And so I'm trying to practice the runs a little bit just so I can kind of help her with them and be right in there with her. I'll maybe tell you a little bit about that next week, but not right now. So a couple of weeks ago, I made a Facebook page and I asked you to like it. And a couple of you got in touch and said you couldn't find it. And I had a couple people look for it who couldn't find it and a couple people who looked for it who could find it. I was there with one person who found it. I saw her. She clicked like. It said that she liked it. And on my page, it still says that I'm the only one who likes it. So if you wouldn't mind, would you please, if you like this podcast, would you please search for Play It Again Swig, four separate words, in Facebook and like it if it shows up. And if it doesn't show up, if you wouldn't mind letting me know, and I won't ask you to do this again until I'm sure that it'll work, I promise. But I would appreciate that a whole lot. If it doesn't work, I apologize, and I will just continue to be unliked except by myself. Okay, so that's it. You can follow me on Twitter at Jocelyn Swigger. You can find out more about this project at playitagainswig.com. I'd love to hear from you if you have questions or comments. And thank you so much for being my practice buddy. Dum, 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 dum.